So, hey, this is Joe and Lisa Duty. We're back in the studio this morning, and for our podcast here, we've got Cody Duty. Hey, Cody, how's it going?
Doing all right. How's it going your way?
Oh, it's actually going pretty good. This is podcast number 3, actually, and so just kind of wanted to call you this morning and get your feelings on some things. You know, as you know, this is a photographic podcast, and it's about stories in the field, from journalists all over the world. We'll be interviewing several, and kind of wanted to start off one with you since, you grew up with me. One of the two as a kid, and you became this nationwide, global, actually, photojournalist from all over the world. Can you...
Well, thanks, Dad. I appreciate that.
Sure. Can you tell us a little bit about... tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, so, just keeping it simple. I mean, I obviously grew up with you and went to all your stuff and got to see how a photographer works in action before I ever, took a professional role. And that really benefited me quite a bit. And then, I left Cater and went to Western Kentucky, where I went there because it was the number one school in the nation at the time, photojournalism. Kind of makes sense. There's absolutely nothing to do in Bowling Green, so you have to take pictures. And after that, I got a couple internships. I even went back to the Los Angeles Messenger to intern with you. And then had other internships with the Associated Press, Dallas Morning News, Lincoln Journal Star, out in Virginia, and Austin American Statesman. And then finally graduated and landed a job at the Houston Chronicle. And after about 5 pretty successful years there, I moved to the Texas Medical Center, where I now work for their pretty high-end medical magazine covering the hospitals and things throughout the nation and the state.
Sweet. Well, how do you think photojournalism prepared you for where you're at now, Cody?
I think that as a photojournalist, the difference, I was just having this conversation with someone the other day who had some pictures taken of their wedding venue, and she didn't understand why they didn't come out really correctly. And it's because the light was so harsh, and it was a really tough time of the day to take pictures. And I was explaining to her the difference between a photojournalist and a photographer is a photojournalist is someone who is in every single kind of photo scenario. I always like, not to take away from Navy SEALs, but as a photojournalist, you're kind of the Navy SEAL of photography because you have to know how to do everything. Backlight, front light, side light. You might be at a fire dealing with spot news, and you have to function under pressure. And so, the long way of answering your question is that there's no photo situation that I haven't been in. I've been strapped to the side of an airplane, been at funerals where, you had to be extremely quiet. And so now I can go into a lab. I'm in a ton of labs all the time. I'm on top of buildings. There's nothing that I can't overcome. And I definitely wouldn't have those abilities had I not spent years as a photojournalist.
Well, I agree with you. And I find that right on target. Given my experience as well there, I can only imagine at your level from, Associated Press and Dallas Morning News, stuff like that, Austin American Statesman and all that. I can only imagine the level of experience that you gained through that. And so just kind of wanted to share a little bit, with our audience what this podcast is about is sharing some of those experiences in the field and maybe funny story or tragic story. Would you be interested in sharing anything with us this morning?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. It's been a wild ride, that's for sure.
You got anything that sticks out in your mind that you'd like to share with our viewers?
Well, the first story, I think the funniest story is, you know, as you know, I know you've had some crazy stuff happen to you that I've been a part of, you know, and you can, I want to hear you tell the story because it always makes me laugh about you getting run over. But probably going back, one of the funnier stories was that we had gotten early. I mean, you can get there 3 hours early, but you can't get there a minute late to a photo scene because you might miss something. And you know, you took that quite literally. So we would get places like 3 hours early. And I remember we got to the carnival, Butterfield Stage Days, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Butterfield Stage Day. Yeah, in Bridgeport, Texas. Yes, sir.
Bridgeport. So we got there, and I remember I would always be your pack mule and carry all your photo equipment, and which I really enjoyed. That in itself taught me quite a bit, just being prepared to give you stuff and all that. And I remember I was a bigger boy back then, a little fluffy, and so there was this narrow.
That's good. Narrow that's lane. Good for a pack mule, right?
That's it. Yeah. So there was this narrow. These two rides were back to back, and there was a narrow space where you could walk in between these two rides, these little carnival rides set up. And I remember you had ducked both of your cameras in, pulled your elbows in, and ducked in, and just walked through it. Well, I, you know, being a little fluffy, I had to put my hands out to kind of stabilize and walk through. Well, as soon as I grabbed the fence, my hand just clamped down on the fence, and I just started vibrating, you know, I don't know, a million miles an hour, and I didn't know what was going on. I had blinked, and then I looked up, and I saw you, and then all of a sudden, my hands, after a few seconds, my hands started getting hot, and I thought to myself, oh, my God, what the hell is going on? And then I looked at you, and I just started yelling. That's the only thing that I could think to do is I just started yelling. I was like, and then you turn around, and you looked at me, and then all of a sudden you just, like, reacted brilliantly and just came charging at me and just knocked me off the fence. And come to find out, they had left some, like, wire hooked up to the fence, and I grabbed that thing.
Wow.
It was just like, it was electrifying.
That was pretty scary, you know. All I heard was, "Dad!" You know, and anyway, so once I knocked you down, well, first of all, how old were you when all this took place, Kobe?
I think I was about 13, yeah. I remember the reason I had to put my hands out is because you had your waist pack fixed, and at 13, I was wearing like a 36 waist. And you were smaller than I was, you know, not so fluffy. And I remember the reason I had to put my hands out is because I had to wear the pack like kind of like a bag because I couldn't put it around my waist. So, yeah, I was like 13, maybe 14.
Yeah. It really doesn't. And being able, you know, hearing the story is one thing, but being able to live through it with you is kind of cool now, knowing that you didn't get hurt and everything. And I remember, first thing is you rolled out to the ground. You know, you'd been doing photography really intensely for about a year at that point. And I remember you did a roll and you were guarding your camera equipment and you come up, "Dad, you reckon the camera equipment's okay?"
Yeah. That's a true, true photojournalist and photographer who the first thing that they're worried about is, "Where's my camera equipment and is it okay?"
Yeah, yeah.
Hope you falling on it didn't break it.
Well, yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, you got anything from, you know, your own personal experiences, maybe where I wasn't there, I hadn't heard, that you want to share? You know, and
yeah.
And the title of this is Pain and Joy. You know, it's about stories both painful and joyous. And so, you know, if you've got anything from your experience you want to share on that, be welcomed.
I remember, there are two, I'll tell you one more funny story, and then I've got, you know, like four that stick out of my mind, but, you know, it's like photojournalists, you're a first responder, really, most of the a lot of the time, and, you know, sometimes you'll get there because you'll hear the call on the scanner, and you'll actually get there before the emergency services or EMTs or first responders arrive, and you witness a lot of things. And a lot of times you'll have post-traumatic stress, but you don't deal with it because a lot of times newspapers and they just don't set you up in a way. It's not talked about. And so, you know, I have have a few stories that haunt me or bother me, and one of the most painful stories that I ever covered was I was in Houston, and there was a scanner. It came over. There was a scanner. There was a shooting, and I've covered so many shootings for all kinds of different reasons, and this one was particularly. It was at a car dealership, and a lot of times you don't know the reason why you're going. The story comes out afterward. You get there, you shoot pictures, you tell the news, and then the actual story comes out after the investigation. Well, when I got there, it was very quick. Very quickly, it came about that a gentleman had showed up with a gun, an angry customer, and he had shot the and killed the car dealers. The used car salesman inside the car dealership.
Wow.
And so, you know, I'm just like photographing at the scene, you know, cops working and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, the wife or mother, a woman, I never found out who it was because a lot of times you don't find out these things, who the people are, because you're on to the next scene, unfortunately. But this woman showed up and she just collapsed on the ground and she was just screaming. She was screaming so loud, like just a very harrowing scream. And I remember it just made my skin crawl because it wasn't like a scream of needing help. It was just she had to have been related and she'd lost someone. And that has always bothered me when I think about that, because you experience the pain of what these people are going through, and you experience it even closer because you're shooting with a long lens and you're there and you're watching these people, but you have to shoot it because, you know, if we have to record these things, because if we don't record them and look back, then we'll repeat them. And so that's not, it's not like you're doing it because you want to. And that just, that scream has stuck with me for a very long time.
Well, that's, that had to be really tough to shoot. I mean, you know, just to witness something like that's one thing, but, you know, I found that witness it through the lens, you know, just makes you part of the actual scene. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you have to be, you're vulnerable too. You know, you're much more absorbent, I think. I mean, you're almost like an open wound on a scene sometimes, just depending on, you can be a closed, callous individual, but you know, some of us are like an open wound on the scene, just absorbing all the things that are happening, and it's extremely difficult sometimes.
Well, because a lot of times you're probably witnessing those people whose loved one just passed away for whatever reason. You're witnessing them finding that out.
Yeah.
And that guttural response of, you know, pain and agony, and that's tough to watch. It's really tough to watch somebody go through that. And
now you mentioned shooting it with the long lens. How would you as a photojournalist approach a scene like that, Cody? What camera? What lens? You know, what's your go to? What do you do?
Well, I think, that particular time, because I was on the spot news beat, I was basically like the first responder to all the accidents. I knew I was either going to be really close or really far away. And, you know, Robert Capa said, if your pictures aren't good enough, you're not close enough. Right. And which he ended up stepping on a landmine and dying, so he probably got a little too close. But, you know, it was important to me to have a long lens and a short lens. So I usually got out of the car with a 300 2.8 that was on a full frame camera. So it was a little bit shorter. You know about all that with the crop sensors. And so I usually got out with a 300 and a 16-35.
Okay.
So,
wow. So you were either shotgun or sniper effect then.
That's, yes, sir. That's a perfect analogy.
So did you, you know, in that, did you have a favorite? I mean, if you had a choice of being one or the other, did you have a choice, or just like whatever the scene deemed, or what?
Yeah, I think it's all situational. I mean, you know, the best football coach is situational. Best, you know, military people or situational. And I think it just all depended. I mean, I will say, like, I've always loved the 16 millimeter lens, but the look of the 300 millimeter is unlike, you know, it's just, it's almost unlike anything else. Not the 400, not the 200, but the 300 prime 2.8 lens is just, it's hard to beat.
Well, that's cool. I agree with you. That gives an amazing bokeh, and so is that correct? Like amazing depth of field separation from your subject?
Yeah. Oh, it's huge. It's huge. Yeah, it's, it's, gives you that compression, and, beautiful. Cool. I don't know how to describe it other than, you know, part of the brain can't describe feelings.
Well,
I certainly can't describe it.
Well, that's what makes our job what it is. You know, I think that we're not able to describe it in words because some things just can't be, you know, described by words. You have to see it. And hopefully, I think in my experience is like if you feel it, the stronger you feel it, the stronger your subject is going to feel it, the stronger you can present it. And does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's the exact same. I agree with you 100%. You know, it's all about being close. Like if you're close to the 300 millimeter lens and you see the tears streaming down people's faces, which I've got plenty of those pictures, or if you can, you know, shoot it with a 16 millimeter lens and you're up close and you see the joy and the giant smile of someone's face. I mean,
yeah,
it's all about one extreme or the other for me.
Joy and pain. By the way, can you shoot that bird that's up in the tree there somewhere? No,
is that bothering you? I figure it's giving
no,
it a little flavor.
It's kind of, it gives a kind of a peaceful
it
scenario
kind
to
of
the
refreshing.
Not as peaceful conversation, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, I could shoot it with a 300. So.
Well, that's cool. So, Cody, where do you find yourself this day and time? And, I mean, where do you see yourself in the future? Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Well, I usually find myself wherever I am. You can't lose yourself. Because if you lose yourself, somebody might pick you up and take you home, and you'll never find yourself again. No, I find myself, wanting to pass on the knowledge in the future. You know, photography takes a toll on you emotionally, physically. You know, you start to just break down, and but the mind, you know, stays. And I hope to in the future, you know, teach people. I love to teach people. I love to teach them about photography. I love to. So I hope to run a department one day, like a visual department, and oversee the, you know, the vision of a particular entity and just pass on the knowledge that I have for photography and even video storytelling.
Well, that's awesome. I find that very noble. And I think in my experience, my teaching is part of the thing that I love most, seeing that light in the student's eyes, you know, and you know, when they get a great shot and, you know, all that, I don't think there's anything that compares to maybe not even taking the pictures. You know, I don't know, but, that's pretty awesome. You got anything that, if I'm a photojournalist just starting out in the world and, you know, you're probably a little closer to that generation than I would be, but would you have anything that, or advice or pointers that you'd want to give a young photojournalist just starting out?
Yeah, I think that it doesn't matter whether it's photography, it doesn't matter what it is. When we decide to do something or start doing something, you know, that voice comes in our head and says, don't do it at all. Or it says, if you do it, it has to be perfect. And, you know, people just need to start. And that's what I try to tell people is I'm like, start, just make mistakes, screw up. You know, the more mistakes you make, those are actually opportunities for learning and growth. And so, you know, experiment, write down notes. I remember whenever you were teaching me, whenever we started out, and I was trying to learn the flash. And I remember we were at the shop, and I had one roll of film. And
oh, so you shot film in the film days.
Oh, yeah, we should, I guess we should have talked about that. The old film, yeah, I probably should have told you the old string it out film story. But,
I don't know,
it's so easy nowadays to do digital and just shoot it and then not really absorb what you're learning. With you, I remember I shot, there was an engine that was removed from my old Volkswagen Beetle, and I put my camera on a tripod, and then I shot pictures, and then I wrote notes exactly what everything was, and then I shot another picture, make an adjustment, shot another picture, and then I had all those notes to learn from. It's just really important to just shoot photos, try different things, experiment, fail, and really reap the benefits of making mistakes.
Well, I agree with you. I think that, you know, that's kind of the same way I learned back before metadata and all that. You know, I remember I would shoot several rolls of film, take notes on every frame number, what I shot it with, all that. Then I'd take it to, of course, at 16, you're on a limited budget, you know, and I'd take it to Skaggs and go in there and, because actually, if you didn't take the pictures, you didn't have to pay for them. So they'd give you an hour to look at them, and I'd compare my notes, turn them all back in, except for maybe one picture, and it'd cost me a dollar something for, you know, to process the roll. And that was the way.
Hey, in 1932, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it wasn't quite that long, but, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
Well,
that's funny.
Cody, it's been really enjoyable visiting with you this morning, and I appreciate you sharing these stories with us. Where can our viewers find your work at if they wanted to know more about you?
You can check me out on the interwebs. I'm at CodyDuty.com.
Okay.
And yeah, pretty much all my work's there.
That's
links to my videos.
CodyDuty.com for more information there. And so we just want to say thanks again for coming on. And to my viewers, this is a new venture for us, and we're trying to perfect the process. And along the way, we're going to make mistakes, like Cody was just talking about. This morning's interview is on two phones, since Cody does live in Houston and we're kind of 5-6 hours away. We had him on the phone, and so this is kind of a trial process, and stick with us, guys. The content's good and the technique's only good.
Content's
better.
Great. Content's great. You guys are doing awesome, man.
So,
no, I mean, I didn't mean from this podcast. No, I actually meant you guys' website and what you're covering and what you're trying to do. It's just cool, man. It's like a new venture. And, like, you're breathing life into what some people might call like a dying art form, you know, as far as like the newspapers and stuff. And you guys are figuring out a way to revolutionize it. And that's pretty freaking cool.
All right. Well, hey, we appreciate it. And I like the work you've been doing. And, hey, this is Joe and Lisa Duty, and we're going to wrap this one up. If you would like to see more of our work, check out joeduty.com, Pro360 Virtual Tours, or texasphotographyworkshops.com. And we'll be back with the next blog. We'll be coming to you with a writer-journalist, Brandon Evans, and we'll be hearing stories from the field again. Thanks, Cody.
Thanks, Cody.